This is Coffee with Kelly, a dynamic podcast that's dedicated to driving positive change in school safety. I'm your host, Ethan Woodman, product marketing specialist for Crisis Go. And I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Kelly Moore, senior school safety specialist for Crisis Go. Our mission is to empower you with essential knowledge, tools, and inspiration required to foster a safer and more secure school environment. We hope this podcast will be the catalyst for transformation in your schools. Join us as we continue to dive into the world of school safety.
All right. It took us a little bit to get here, but we are here.
We are. Good morning.
Yeah.
Ethan.
Good morning. I was told that I need to come up with a different intro because I say good morning, Kelly, every time.
Why do you need a new intro to that?
I don't know. I thought it was like my thing, but.
Yeah. Good morning is good morning. Let's go. Here we are. It's morning. Let's have a good one. I brought my T-Rex mug today, not my Coffee with Kelly mug.
You could be as cool as me and have a Coffee with Kelly mug.
That's an awful high bar to set for everybody. No sarcasm.
No sarcasm at all there, Kelly. So you guys, this is what I deal with behind the scenes. Kelly's actually just a meanie.
You know, I always say that there's no sense in wasting sarcasm.
I agree.
Sarcasm is a terrible thing to waste. What do we got going today, Ethan?
Well, I guess we will start off strong.
Okay.
And I will, unfortunately, this, you know, we keep seeing this happen. And between this recording and the last recording, we had another school shooting, and I think it was in Iowa.
Was?
Yeah. In it.
At Perry.
Based on the information that I'm seeing, it looks like a 17-year-old shot an 11-year-old. Mm-hmm. So that's just insane.
Right.
But the point that I want to talk about, I mean, we can talk about that too, but the point that I want to bring up is like, We're not on here to just, it's not like you don't know what you're talking about, right? And there is some credibility here. And I tried finding the podcast that you said it was in a recent one. It was probably in October, maybe November. I just didn't have time to listen through like 5 hours of podcast. Right. So, but at one point you were talking about how at the time, the upcoming holiday season, it's winter, it gets darker out sooner. I mean, all these things. And for people that are more susceptible to depression or anything like that, mm-hmm. right? It affects them more.
Right.
And you had mentioned that I think typically these school shootings do happen after a break. Mm-hmm. And you kind of gave a warning essentially of like, hey, like you need to pay attention to this, like after Christmas break, after winter break, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's, you need to look out for that stuff. And in Iowa, literally the first day back, this happened.
Yeah. 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 So
crazy.
I've said this many times. It, you know, it's not typical that it happens, but there is an uptick in the number of shootings that we have based upon some research that was done, I believe, by the FBI. I think it was the FBI who reported it, but it's been a little while since I've read that. But the idea is, if you are to need to focus on a time frame within a school year of when these are likely to occur or have a higher incidence of occurrence, then you need to start looking at those times where you have an extended break. And we're talking about when you come back from summer break, Thanksgiving break, winter break, spring break, those types of breaks where you have 3 or 4 days where these people who are struggling go home, they're isolated, they're left to their own devices, they have access, unlimited access to the internet, they're sort of on this downward spiral. And they come out of that break more energized, I guess, more committed. So part of that study is you really have to look at, you know, the first week or two when you're back. And while this most recent incident occurred the day that they got back, oftentimes they'll wait several days or maybe or a week or into the second week of the return. And sometimes what ends up happening is they're almost at their breaking point before going on the break. So from the left of bang theory, we should be looking at anybody who's elevated in their anxiety, their depressions, their concerning behaviors, those types of things before the break. And if we can identify that, then we have a longer opportunity to address those issues, right? But if we miss those or we fail to see them, then we start looking at the people who are coming back. And what we're looking for is the differences in behavior before the break to the differences in the behavior after the break. And oftentimes they will either do one of two things. Essentially, they'll spiral down, or they will say, you know what? I'm not being bullied. I'm at home. Things are getting better. I'm starting to feel better about myself. And they say, well, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm having a bad episode or what have you. And then they say, well, let's see how it goes. And we're gonna give it another try. And they get back. And as soon as they get back, it starts all over again. And then they spiral very quickly. And so that's why there's like this quick little honeymoon period where they get back and this, let's just see how it goes. And maybe they've been talking. Maybe there have been attempts to mitigate and intervene. And they say, okay, all right, I'll work on this. And they get back and it's not working for them. So they escalate very quickly because they've gotten to that point where they look at, I've tried everything that I can do and it's not working. And I think that's the case in this most recent. He was, you know, if you look at some of the reports and some of the witness statements, that the subject of that had been subjected to what appears to me years of relentless bullying. And there was one statement from a witness or a friend or an acquaintance that said, that really stuck out to me, is that the subject here, his younger sister, started being bullied. And they don't really elaborate. It's a news article. I don't understand all of the context and things like that. But here's somebody, if you take it for on the surface level, here's somebody who was bullied. And then all of a sudden his sibling is being bullied. And now he's looking at it and saying, look, this has got to stop one way or the other. And that's where they end up. And maybe that was the thing that triggered him so quickly as opposed to waiting a few days. But this is something that, you know, when we start looking at, you know, our last couple of blogs and podcasts were kind of centered on the unthinkable, right? And the unimaginable, and trying to shift our mindset from that kind of mindset to, well, what could happen? What can I imagine? What can I think about? And what do I need to do to prevent that? If Kelly can identify three or four major breaks in a school year that we should be looking at, then it is predictable. It is thinkable. We can think about this and we can say, what happens if, so that we're not surprised about this, right? As simple as in this circumstance, we know that the kid was there fairly early.
Yeah, it was like 7:30 or something.
He was in and preparing himself early, right? He was sitting in a bathroom stall saying, okay, now we wait.
Wow.
So are we asking the question, what are you doing here so early? What's going on with you? As simple as that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or good morning, you're here awful early. How are you doing? Right. And so these are some of the things that I think we have to shift our mindset, and we have to look at the potential of occurrences and looking at trying to identify those kids that are struggling, especially around these very traditional holidays where people generally, the public is expected to be having, you know, season greetings, happy holidays, those types of things, where the people who aren't experiencing that, they're not experiencing the excitement, they're not experiencing the joy of the holidays. Those are the ones that we have to really look for and identify to make sure that they're not descending into this, you know, pit of despair.
Do you think that typically this is something that a lot of the school shooters suffer with, is being bullied? Is that like a pretty common thing? Or
yeah, so, you know, it's not necessarily the number one, because we don't know what the number one motivator is, right? But it's the one that's most reported by those who have survived.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense.
So being bullied, and we look at, and this is why there's so much emphasis on anti-bullying policies, anti-bullying laws, ability to anonymously report those things, is because this is such a big factor in this, it's such a big component of this overall problem that we have in school violence. It's such a huge component there. And because we don't know what motivates them to take that step. And we do know that there is a grievance. And we do know that, and we identify these things a lot in the steps, I should say, in the pathway to violence. When we discuss the pathway to violence, we don't know what causes somebody to move from one step to the next step. We do, because it's self-defined. And, you know, I saw a graphic just the other day where, with all of the efforts that we're doing, we're having more and more shootings. It's a steady climb. So, you know, obviously what we're doing is not working. And one of those things that I think we need to look at is the bullying component. Like I've talked about many, many times, is when do we intervene? When do we look at concerning behavior? I think we talked about this a little bit, either the last podcast or the one before, where we are looking at the differences between concerning behaviors as they apply to academics and those concerning behaviors as they apply to threats and violent actions. And they run pretty parallel. The same types of behaviors, they're just in a different context. And, you know, obviously, our educators are very comfortable trying to figure out the issues with the concerning behaviors in the academic success realm. And I think we need to start saying, okay, how do we think that those concerning behaviors impact the potential for violence? And I think once we start doing that, I think we will start seeing a trend here. But when we go back to bullying, I think one of the things that we have to understand is bullying is a self-defined action, and the impact is self-defined. So I think that bullying, from a very high level, bullying is almost entirely comes from a position of power.
Oh yeah, definitely.
How they use that power, how they gain the leverage based upon that power, all of those things are self-defined by the bully. But how their impact are felt is self-defined by the receiver of the bullying. Some people respond and says, you know what? I'm not going to be bullied here, right? Others will take it and, you know, whatever, but others are victimized by it. And we've talked about this before. I think we're far past, or we should be, where we can look at your typical schoolyard behavior of the past and look at incidences that are occurring today and saying, oh, you know, that's just kids being kids. That's just schoolyard behavior. I think you have to understand what that behavior is doing. What are the circumstances? What are the impacts? What are the potentials? And until we start changing that culture based upon this definition that these things are self-defined, so we have to look at each case individually, and we can't just lump it into a general category of that schoolyard behavior. They're 6 years old, but they can't do anything, and we know that that's proven us wrong. So let's learn from that. Let's move forward with that.
That's definitely an interesting point, that like you can't look at it and just come up with some overarching solution, that like every case is different because every kid is going to interpret that in their own individual way and respond to it in their own very specific way. And so it needs a little bit more finesse.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. And this is the difficulty we have in the ability to create a decision matrix. If this happens, you do this. If this happens, you do this. Because between this and that, there's 1,000 different options in there. 1,000 different variables that have influence on the impact of whatever this and that were. And I think that's where we're missing the boat. And I will continue with that train of thought until somebody proves me wrong. But I think that if we're going to have an impact on the prevention of this, we have to shift that. We have to teach kids how to respond to being bullied. You know, I think that's one of the things that we possibly miss in today's society, is we tell people what they shouldn't do to people, how they shouldn't bully people, and we can define what that is. But are we teaching the coping skills and the ability to work through when you are being bullied? How do we react to that? What are our options? What are our solutions? And are we working through that? I mean, it could be out there and I'm not aware of it because I don't sit in a first grade class. I don't know. But maybe it's out there. I don't know. And I'm just you know, think to myself, and I try to think, what are we missing? Where are we losing our opportunities? And I go back to, you know, if we're teaching our kids not to bully, but we realize it happens every day in every schoolyard. This is not one-offs or whatever, right? It's not an uncommon practice. This is happening every day, every schoolyard. And I would argue that it's happening every day in many of the classes by many of the teachers who are there. And they may or may not even be aware of it because it's self-defined. It's the impacts and how they are interpreted by the receiver of whatever that behavior is present. And that it's there for them to interpret the power that's coming at them. As simple as looking at being called on or being told you're wrong when they are called on. You know, it's those types of things where you have to look at the reaction of the student and say, ooh, that didn't go the way I wanted it to, or I thought it was, or it got the exact results I was hoping for. But maybe that wasn't appropriate, right? You know, singling a kid out and, you know, those types of things. So I think we're due for an overall review of not only our students, but our schools and what they are doing. And I know that's going to upset or offend some of our teachers and so forth. But I think we have to look at what it is that we're doing as educators. I think we have to look at what we're not doing as educators. I think we have to look at the impacts of these everyday instances. And because we know that, I'm telling you, there is nobody in the education world that can say bullying is not occurring in my school today. You can say that you didn't recognize it. You can say that you didn't deal with it. You can say lots of things, but you cannot say, especially in today's electronic world, digital world, it's happening and it's relentless. So how do we intervene there?
I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, that's another way to look at it too, is that even if the bullying's not happening in the school physically, like the same kids that are in those school could be getting bullied at a different time online and still come into the school with that same mindset or the way that they receive that bullying and how they respond to it, still going to affect the school if it's the same kids.
Yeah, right? Let me make an observation. During the pandemic, when at the initial stages of the pandemic, when I was still working for the school district, I got a call and somebody asked me, you know, we're online and we're doing these remote classes. What is our responsibility to report bad behavior? What's our, you know, since they're not on campus and I don't control them, am I still what we, most of us refer to as mandated reporters, which means there's a law that says if you see abuse, neglect, concerning behaviors, those types of things. States are different and exactly what they're required to report, but they're required to report. And so the thought was, if they're not in front of me, I don't have to report it. And so the person who called me wanted to clarify that. And I said, there's nothing in there that says if the student is in front of you, you have to. And if they're not, you don't. What it does say is if you become aware of, then you have to report, yeah. Right? So it doesn't exempt you from doing that. And the reason I'm saying this is because we're in the same situation today, even though we're not remote. We're having people who are abused, neglected, bullied, tormented. There's extortion going on based upon different circumstances, all occurring outside of campus. But what's the one common connection between those who are bullying, participating in these types of behaviors, and those who are receiving it? It's the school. And we talked about this early on about how the schools are the center of their little micro universe, their micro community, and how everything that happens in, around, and connected to that school involves that school. So people are going home, they're getting bullied, they're getting abused, they're getting neglected, extorted, all of these things that we just don't want to happen. But they're manifesting themselves at school. And we need to look at where we can impact that. And if we become aware of that, in many cases, we're required by law to report that. So if you have a mandated reporting requirement, which all public schools do, and you have a reporting system and you become aware of it, but they say on the way home or while they were at home, we saw this, or they were at this activity, let's say a baseball game or whatever, and they become aware of one of those mandated requirements, reporting requirements, they need to report it.
Yeah, definitely got to read those words carefully.
Yes, yeah. But I think it goes back to our job is,
yeah,
as educators, has evolved to where we can no longer, you know, say, this is just kids being kids, this is schoolyard behavior, those types of things. And I think we have to come to grips with that. I think we need to understand that and what are those impacts as it relates to our school safety and so forth. And then we have to figure out, you know, the resources that we need for that. It's just, we're in that time of year. I know we talked a little bit about this in the last podcast. We're still working through those, identifying those gaps and getting our administrators on board and providing budget and time with that. But we still need to keep pushing for that. We, you know, that's an ongoing process.
All right, Kelly. So who is responsible when all of this goes wrong?
Right. So we get into it in a lot more depth in the most recent blog that I wrote.
And your so wonderfully written blogs.
Some would say no, but okay, we'll go with that. But really it's identifying responsibilities. You know, we've been talking for years about shared responsibility and who's responsible for what. And we've talked about this shared responsibility with the understanding that when we say that everyone has a role, everyone has a responsibility to ensure the safety of their schools. And some of those roles are very difficult to identify initially, beforehand. But when we start looking at if something fails, I will tell you, looking at past lawsuits, I will tell you, looking at past after action reviews, people will start pointing fingers very, very quickly. And if you start looking at failure, and failure being the identified reason for the event to occur, and oftentimes there are many failures, there are many opportunity points, as we like to say, these were opportunities for us to prevent this from occurring, and we miss them. If we look at the safety program as a whole, and we say it's a shared responsibility, everyone has a part, and everyone has to participate, actively participate in those responsibilities, I will tell you that if there is a failure, we're going to start pointing at the people starting at the highest level, and we're going to start working our way down, unless and until we point to a single factor that could have prevented the event from occurring. And we know from our many conversations that there is never a single factor. It's a series of incidences that were addressed, identified, and not dealt with, or dealt with inappropriately, or what have you. So, yeah. But they're going to, people, this is how mandates are created. This is how best practices are created. Is somebody looked at the after action and said, what were the steps, or what were the actions or factors involved that we could have identified early, that if we had and dealt with them, they would have prevented this? We've talked about this before. Generally speaking, people are going to start pointing their finger at a person, not a system, because it was a person who failed to use the system properly. It was a person who failed to make sure the system was working properly. It's a person who failed to lock the door. It's a person who failed to report. So in the blog, I say, if you have failure, who's responsible for that? And the answer to that is you are. Look at yourself and say, what did I do or could have done to make this better? And when we look at the prior incidences, and we start to get proactive in understanding, and we start thinking about the quote unthinkable, and we start imagining what would happen if in the unimaginable, and we start looking at, okay, what do we need to do, and where do we need to go with this? And if at any time you sit back and you go, oh, I'm responsible for that, then you're also responsible for the failure of that. This is not, okay, you're only responsible for this if it goes good. You're responsible for this as the case may be in failure. In the blog, I use the NFL analogy. We're at the end of the NFL season, and we're only a couple of days, 3 or 4 days past the end of the regular season, getting ready for the playoffs. Already, there have been 2 or 3 general managers fired, 6 openings in the head coaching positions, and yet it's a team sport. It's a team responsibility to win. And so you might ask, well, Kelly, why would you use that as an analogy then? Why aren't they firing everybody who failed? Because the bottom line is, both in accountability to the game of football and the success as measured by the NFL, the fans, the organizations, there are people who are more responsible for that success than others.
Yeah.
And so are you going to start firing players? Maybe. But generally speaking, you have head coaches, general managers, assistant coaches that have a greater impact on the success of that football team. And if you translate that to the schools, now we're starting to look at, okay, who's responsible? Safety team members, policy, board members, superintendents for accountability, ensuring that everyone understands what's expected of them, principals, assistant principals. These are the ones that when we go back in time and we start seeing who's being held accountable through lawsuits, disciplinary actions, and so forth, it's those people. So is it their responsibility to ensure success? Yes. But it's a shared responsibility, and they need to understand that they need to get everyone involved in their role and hold them accountable for that. And this is where I think from the implementation safety program side, what we typically and traditionally think about, do we have a solid safety program? I think that's where we need to come from is, okay, I'm the principal. I don't need to know everything about what's going on, but I do need to know what is needed and who is responsible for that and make sure that they're doing their job. Make sure that they're the ones, because it might occur on some day when the principal is not even there, the incident, right? And so when the news reporter from the national syndicated news outlet comes and parks their huge satellite van outside your front door, and the first teacher to walk out, they stick the microphone in their face and they say, "What happened?" "Well, this is what happened." "Well, what'd you guys do?" "Well, we don't know. We weren't taught that. We haven't practiced that. We didn't know how to communicate." As soon as they start saying that, this was unthinkable. This is something that I've never expected to be here. Who's responsible for that?
I would bet that most of the time when we recognize failure, we can probably attribute it to people more often than systems, right?
Yes. Yeah. So we've talked about this before too.
I want to make the comment that systems do not replace your responsibility. They help you perform your responsibility probably better and more efficient, but they do not replace
that. Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely correct there. And this is the example that every security problem we have in airports, in prisons and jails and secured environments is, I can't say every, the vast majority of issues we have in those environments are a breakdown in humans following the right protocols, the policies. Either they didn't know, they didn't remember, they weren't held accountable. As an example, they never said anything before. "I've been doing this for the last 10 years. Why are you stopping me now for this?" type thing. And almost every time it's a failure of people or malicious failure, which is people who intentionally circumvent the protocols. And it's almost always a misunderstanding of the technology, right?
Yep, that's true.
And so I think that one, and we talk about this, technology does not replace the manual process. It does not replace those things that you have to do in an emergency that technology can't do for you. Technology can and does make things easier. It makes things like reporting and recording and compliance and all of these other management issues that we have makes it much easier, and it documents things automatically. But when it comes down to it, you're going to have to make sure the doors are locked. You're going to have to make sure that all of your kids are accounted for. all of these things that we have to do, first aid is applied to those who need it. Those things that require human interaction. And if we take that and we look at that, then we understand what it is that we're supposed to do. And, you know, if we understand that, at least we're moving in the right direction. And if we're nothing, a system isn't viable, doesn't work well, if you don't understand what you're supposed to do. And I'll use the metal detector scenario here. Not too long ago, people were screaming that we need metal detectors. And I got several questions. Kelly, we're thinking about getting a metal detector. Would that help us? And I said, well, it depends on what you're trying to do. The people who were advocating that are looking for a solution to detect guns, big metal things that cause lots of injuries, right? Let's get a metal detector. We'll detect the guns. Well, that's great, except for if you have a metal detector, you have to have a process by which to ensure that when they go through the metal detector, there is nothing there that is metallic that will go off. If you're just running people through a metal detector, your binders, your notebooks, your pens, your belt buckles, all of these things that are with us every day that have metal on them are going to set it off. So now you either have to stop every time, or you have to do what a lot of people did, is they unplugged them, set them in the corner and said, these things are going off too much. Well, you didn't know what the technology was for and its capabilities. So, you know, we just have to really think through this. Are metal detectors good at detecting guns? Yes. But they're also good at detecting everything else that's metal. So,
yes.
And I go through when I go to a hockey game, I go through a metal detector. But I have to empty my pockets, put it in all my stuff in a little bucket, and they get to look at it and search that, and then I go through. Do we have the capability of doing that with every student who comes to school, especially in this very short window? Can I get 500 students through this security checkpoint by emptying out their pockets, looking at their backpacks, looking through all of that stuff, and making sure there's no gun in it, and then running through a metal detector to verify that they don't? Because if it goes off then you can pull that kid aside and say, but 95, 80, or 98% of those kids are, if you do that correctly, are going to walk through and not set it off. So now you're looking at the human element there and what they're doing and what their jobs are and if they're fulfilling that. So there's lots there. But if we start looking at failure points and you don't realize who is responsible for something, you need to figure it out, because it's likely you.
It's pretty daunting.
It is, but it's, I mean,
it's likely you.
It's likely you. And you need to do take whatever efforts, whatever measures you need to do to eliminate yourself as that. And the way you do that is being diligent and all these other things that we've been talking about for the last year plus.
Yeah, it's been over a year. Because you did talk about responsibilities in the very early part of the year last year. So,
like, subscribe, and share.
I'll do this since Kelly isn't drinking out of his mug. You can scan that QR code and it will be able to, it'll bring you to our website that has our podcast and blogs full of really, really good information. It's the best information.
What did you say yesterday when you were looking for that statement I made about breaks and the potential for violence?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't want to say it, because then it would be like, it was like, you were reviewing it and you realized how good the content was.
Isn't that what I said?
That's exactly what you said.
It's basically what I said. Like, you know, sometimes you listen to a podcast and it's just like, sometimes they're just funny or they're comical or whatever, but it's like, sometimes they just don't add a whole lot of value to your life. And if you are in any way, shape, or form involved in a school, whether you're a teacher, a district leader, or even a parent, or even a student, this podcast will actually provide some value.
I believe so. I hope so.
I think so. I know so.
Until next time.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell. And if you have any questions about what we discussed, leave a comment on our website at crisisgo.com. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time on Coffee with Kelly, a discussion on school safety.